Blow the horn, go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make his ass quit! That's our framework! That's our MO with the G!
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready!
Alright.
Hello and welcome. The Alabama Football Podcast starts now. Tom, you may have noticed that my prediction for the Mississippi State game was 100% accurate. Boring, what? Physical, 24-7. Tell the listeners what you saw that makes me so right.
Wait a minute. Was that your score prediction?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good job on your part because my score was not dead on. I actually thought we would keep them out of the end zone. And I guess if we had not had a mess up with special teams and allowed them to return it to the 20-yard line, we probably could have kept them out of the end zone. But, you know, it's your typical Mississippi State-Alabama football game. They're another one of those teams that we always play tough. They're always physical. I think they've got a really good job coaching them up. And it just seemed like we couldn't get the brakes to go our way at the beginning of the football game.
You know, I think looking at the offensive side of the ball, it was really just a story of missed opportunities. I mean, we put 24 points up, but we could have easily doubled that. I mean, they botched a punt snap. We didn't score on that series. They hit Mays out of bounds, which gave us, you know, a 15-yard penalty tacked on what was already a pretty good ball position. We couldn't do anything with that. We missed two field goals again. We were 2 of 11 on third downs, which is horrible. And then we failed a quarterback sneak on fourth down. I mean, just the opportunities were there. I mean, we won, but just the opportunities for us to have, you know, looked much more effective on offense certainly were there.
No, they were. And, you know, McCarron didn't really look good in this game. He had his moments. But I kind of want to start talking about Darius Hanks because he was lost on that first play from the offensive side of the ball. And, you know, they tried to tape him up and said he tried to make a go of it, and he was not able to go again. And he is our go-to guy on third down. And I just wonder if that had a little bit to do with our lack of production on third down and kind of keeping the chain moving.
Yeah, I think it really did. And in Mays, I mean, he's out there playing, but we know that he's a little banged up too. So, you know, that dares a team that's going to stack the line anyways to continue to do so. And, of course, they were pretty effective at that.
They were. And, you know, not trying to pick on the other guys, but, you know, the other guys have stepped up and they have made plays, but they have not been asked to make that go-to play when we really need it on third and seven. And so I just noticed a couple different times, you know, where DeAndre White had a couple drops on third down. Kenny Bell had a drop. We were in the red zone about the 10-yard line, and he tried to take off with the ball too early, and he could have probably easily converted that first down. And so, you know, those were just four that jumped out at me, that there were four first down plays that we just didn't convert.
And you take some of those players, you take an Andrew, you take a Bell, even a Gibson, you know, when Mays and Hanks are not available, you know, Mays limited, but certainly not Hanks. And you have to step up and not just be a complimentary guy, but you have to be the guy. It just seemed that some of the guys folded under that pressure.
And also Smelly, you know, Smelly was banged up too with the shoulder. I don't know what the extent of the injury was. And you know, they talked about he was going to go as well, but you really didn't see anything from Smelly either.
He played very, very little, and we've got a lot of guys banged up. And, you know, kind of segue from that, one of the points, you know, I kind of kidded about, you know, picking the score right. But one of the things that you said last week that was spot on was when we were talking about Barrett Jones, and if he can't play or if he's limited, you know, then we move McCullough from the right guard to the left tackle. Then we bring Steen back in at right guard. And, you know, by virtue of one player stepping out, you know, we weaken ourselves at two positions. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, we were really, really unsettled along the offensive line. And in fact, I saw where this was the third offensive starting group in our last four games.
Well, I didn't realize it had been that many, but, you know, just to touch on that for a moment, you and I talked as early as Penn State when we were at that Penn State game about how their defensive tackles, specifically number 71, just really gave Steen and Warmack sometimes all they wanted with that push up the middle. And we saw it again against Florida. We saw it again against Arkansas. And what's interesting to me about this ball game is I actually thought McCullough and Steen played a pretty good game. And late in the game, when we lined up in a two tight end formation, but we had both tight ends on the line of scrimmage, and we were in an obvious running formation, and we allowed the guys to just to get a push and just to drive forward, and you gave the ball to Trent, you got 3, 4, or 5 yards. And so I wanted to ask you about this for a minute, because when I went back and watched the whole game, anytime we tried to do stunts or traps and we'd try to take an Underwood or a Fluker against what seemed like a pretty quick Mississippi State defensive front, they just weren't able to get their head in front of them. I mean, they're coached so well that we're not holding, which I love. But it just seems like, you know, late in the game, as well as early in the game sometimes, when it was just like, we're going to run right at you, it was 3 or 4 yards in a cloud of dust, but they couldn't stop us whenever we did it that way.
I think that, you know, for an offensive lineman, it's often easier just to drive block. It's just basically, you know, man on man, the guy in front of you, you drive him off the ball and create some space. You know, when you start pulling and trapping and pass blocking, you have to think a whole lot more. And I think, you know, some of the offensive linemen, you know, may struggle with that. And again, it goes back to early in the season when we were trying to settle on our offensive line. We didn't look as good as we would have liked early. We settled on the offensive line. The line started to perform very, very well. And then, you know, on Saturday, we shift up the line a little bit and we struggle.
I will say real quick, I think McCullough and Steen did a pretty good job. They actually, I mean, we got no pressure at all on McCarron in the passing game. I mean, they actually did better in the shuffling than I thought they would.
Well, they did. And, you know, this many games in, you're right. We're not going to go completely back. You know, they've had, you know, an infinite number of practices at this point and snaps and reps. And so you can move the puzzle pieces a little bit better now than you could before. But there's still an additive effect when you consider the number of injuries and jostling on the offensive line. And what's a little annoying to me is the mouth breathers who come out on the internet now and talk about us having just an atrocious offense, but they don't recognize the shifting along the offensive line, the wide receivers that are banged up, and then even still the success that we have in that situation. I mean, we did allow 0 sacks, and we did nearly triple the yardage of the opponent. You know, there were certainly some positive to take away from this game, even though we put up just 24 points.
There was, and I just wanted to point out for the listeners that it's kind of like a couple years ago with Mark Ingram. I just wanted to point out that I think sometimes we should just not do all the traps and shifts and pulls and sometimes just run right at them. I wish we did more of that. What did you think about McCarron? We talked about him being a little off and on, and, you know, he made a couple really nice passes on that drag pattern that no team seems like they can cover, and Norwood kind of filled in for that role, and I thought he made some pretty good catches. But on that interception that McCarron threw, when you go back and look at the camera angle, I mean, he had Norwood pulling across the middle in the middle of the zone dragging wide open. He had Trent releasing out of the backfield wide open. He didn't look anywhere but Michael Williams. I mean, it was just something you'd expect out of a sophomore quarterback, but he looked like a sophomore the other night.
Well, it looked almost like a replay of the interception he threw against LSU. You know, obviously it wasn't Morris Claiborne out there, but, you know, the tight end's kind of out in the flat, and it looked very similar. I mean, the defender stepped up in front of the ball. I'll say McCarron probably made the tackle of the night in keeping that kid out of the end zone, though.
He did, you know, especially on the TV when they did the camera angle from behind him in the pocket. They only had 3 guys in the pass pattern, but they were playing a zone, and there was just a huge hole in the middle of that zone. And he had Norwood about 15 yards over the middle just holding his hands up, and he just didn't even look his way. It was just frustrating.
And, you know, that kind of begs the question. And, you know, last week it was Brandon Gibson, you know, that was wide open. And for a little bit, it makes you wonder, probably less so with Gibson than Norwood, but it makes you wonder, hey, those guys aren't in very often, not nearly as often. And so McCarron's not, I mean, think about it. He's human too. He's not necessarily going to look for those guys because, you know, he's not throwing to them as much in practice and probably still should have hit both of them. And that's where you talk about, you know, that's the sophomore in him coming out. you know, a senior is going to, you know, junior and senior is going to find those guys. But, you know, at the end of the day, has he plateaued? I would say he hasn't regressed. I'd say he's plateaued. He's developed. He's far from where he was at the beginning of the season. He's just probably reached a little bit of a plateau at this point.
I think he has. And I think the key thing that you just mentioned there is he's just not hitting his progressions. And what I really don't understand is he's not getting a lot of pressure. I mean, he's not getting knocked around like we're knocking around these other quarterbacks. And he's just not going through his second and third progressions as much as he was, you know, earlier in the year. What did you think about the quarterback sneak? Because I want to get your thoughts and then kind of give you my opinion on the play call.
Well, he's got to get low. He's not going to go over the top. I mean, let's call it what it is, right? He's got to choose which of Vallejos' cheeks he's going to go off of. And, you know, he just needs to put his head in there and shove. And, you know, probably going between Warmack and Vallejos was the way to go. He just seemed to try to go over Vallejos. And, it, you know, he's 6'4", he's lanky. He's going to get stood up and pushed back. And that's essentially what happened.
Did you notice the feet placement, though?
On that possession, I did not.
He did the same thing that he did earlier in the season.
Yeah, I've noticed that he's kind of screwy with his feet placement, even on, you know, non-sneaks. He'll kind of stagger his feet sometimes, you know, when he's going to back out and either drop back or hand off. And then sometimes he'll line up kind of parallel. So he's kind of screwy with his feet, I've noticed, as the season has progressed. That's something I think, you know, irrespective of what the play call is, in a sneak-like situation, you know, people are going to key on that. But I think that needs to be coached out of his game. But you know what? He does it a lot.
First of all, they have given him a ton of freedom with what appears to be checking at the line of scrimmage. We have talked numerous times about him getting to the line of scrimmage and seeing what the defense is giving him and checking into something else. Well, Dave, on that play, of the 9 Mississippi State defense that were on the line of scrimmage, they all had to somehow be between the 2 guards in the center. To say they were pinched, you would have thought they were on top of each other like a rugby game. And so when he came up to the line of scrimmage, Vallejos didn't have 1 guy in front of him. He had about 6 in front of him. It was almost like bowling pins at a bowling alley stacked up so much on top of each other. And either A, check to something else like a handoff, or B, I'm sorry, I kind of disagree with you on the burying your head. You're 6'4". It was about a half a foot. Jump your ass over Vallejos, who was getting down low. I could have got that damn first down. It didn't take much effort.
Well, that's fine, but commit to either get low and drive or jump over the top.
Don't
just kind of stand. Don't just kind of stand there and think you're going to walk that. You know, I guess he thought he was going to waltz that yard, and it just wasn't there.
But it was so frustrating because when he got to the line of scrimmage, he had to see all the people over Vallejos. How do you think Vallejos is going to be able to move their 5 or 6 butts? It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, when you talk about he has authority to check out, you know, he probably has, you know, there's play A and there's play B, but I don't think that he has open playbook, you know, like an Andrew Luck does. He can go up there and call anything from the playbook at any time. And I'm sure there's very specific situations, such as potentially this one, where he is not given an option and he's, you know, he can't call out of the play. He's going to have to run what's called.
Well, then this is to the coaches who don't give a shit what I say. Stop running a quarterback sneak because you've done it 3 or 4 times this year and it's been woefully unsuccessful. You listen to these games and you hear all this about, you know, the Atlanta Falcons had the 4th down play on Sunday and you hear the, should we hand it off or should we do a quarterback sneak? Well, I'm sorry. If your quarterback is so shitty at a quarterback sneak, then hand it off to Trent Richardson, and I think he can find a way to get a foot somewhere.
Yeah, you know, probably so. But in the scheme of things,
that's a big play,
man.
It was at the 50-yard line. That could have been a really huge play in that game. Had Mississippi State not been inept and dropped a ball on 3rd down, they could have potentially scored. It was only 10-0. If they convert after we gave it up at the 50, it could have been a 10-7 ball game. That was a really big screw-up, in my opinion.
Well, would you have punted the ball then?
No, I would have given it to Trent Richardson, who could have got me a half a foot.
Okay.
I guarantee you Trent would have found a hole somewhere. And just his pure brute strength would have got me. I guess I'm just so frustrated and passionate about this because it's 3 or 4 times. Damn, either teach him how to quarterback sneak or just stop calling the play. It's just, it's frustrating. What else did you see on offense?
Well, on offense, I guess the last point that I'd make is that, you know, we held the ball for 35 minutes. And so a lot of missed opportunities, a lot of injuries, but there was a lot of things that we did, you know, really well. And I would have liked to have seen us, you know, crack 30, you know, maybe 40 points. But, you know, we put up 24 points, a physical game against Mississippi State. You know, Vegas had it in an 18-point game, and we won by 17. And you know that they're not going to score much on us. So I guess in some quarters we performed about what people expected.
Yeah, but that field goal thing, we'll have to talk about that in a minute. What about defense? What did you see on the defensive side of the ball?
I think absolutely, you know, stifling. I think every game I kind of come away with a word to how I describe, you know, how we play defense. And I think this week we were stifling. I mean, we held them to 12 rushing yards. We held them to 0.4 yards per rush. They were 3 of 16 on third downs. You know, we definitely affected the quarterback. We had 5 sacks. They played 3 quarterbacks. We knocked one of them out of the game. You know, they had about a third of the offensive production as we did. And in the touchdown that they score, you know, that was more against special teams in my mind than it was against the defense. So I think our defense was just suffocating.
You know, and just to add to that for a second, as good as we've seen Alabama defenses in the past, and I'm not trying to say they're the best defense by any means because, you know, different personnel and it's kind of hard to do comparisons. But when you look at just the pure numbers and some of what you mentioned, we are witnessing something pretty damn special. I mean, they took that pick six to, what was it, the 4-yard line and came away with no points because, thank goodness, their field goal kicker sucks as bad as ours does sometimes. And then, like you said, it was only that special teams kickoff return that got them to the 20 and they converted one pass. I mean, we're really witnessing something pretty special here.
You know, our defense is definitely fun to watch. And, you know, this could be one for the ages in terms of, you know, the number of years that you and I have watched Alabama play. And this defense has to rank right up there with some of the best that we've seen anyways.
I wanted to quickly break down a play in the defensive series on that potential interception. First of all, just a shout out to Josh Chapman and Williams. They are not Robert Lester, right? They don't have his same skill set. Is that correct?
That is my knowledge.
Was it just the moment? Did they just want to be in the lights like Todd Blackledge was saying? Do you think Robert Lester called them off? What do you think that was?
I think Blackledge was spot on. About 6 defenders wanted their name in the headlights with an INT.
Because when you went back and looked at it, it was just Williams and Chapman. And so you got 2 300-plus-pound guys fighting for the ball, and Lester's, he didn't have a chance of holding on to that ball.
Not against those lugs. What you need to do in that situation, and it's hard because it's an interception. It's, you know, when you line up the scrimmage, it's sort of spontaneous. It's not expected. But what you need to do is sort of drill that you treat that almost like an onside kick where the first layer of folks is just there to block. So the next layer, you know, can make a play on a ball. And it's hard to do that in, you know, construct because it's more confused. It's much less organized than in an onside kick. But if Williams and Chapman have just kind of built a wall and allowed Lester to make the play, he would have easily cradled that ball.
Yeah, and I guess I got to pick on Chapman. You know, he's made some good plays this year, but this is 2 weeks in a row, one with the block in the back on Barron's interception. And on this play, man, you know, when
I'm not going to hold this one against him quite like the other one.
Right. Well, hey, on that play, just to mention it for a quick second, did you notice that they were trying to go deep to the left there in ISO and man-to-man coverage? They had kind of faked a handoff to the right, which had kind of taken Barron at his safety position and had drew him to the middle of the field. And I just thought it was interesting because it was early in the game. They were trying to take their shot against Milner man-to-man on that play had Dante not got in there.
Yeah, and, you know, you can't say that you blame them. I mean, you have to take your shots where you can. You know, some of the other teams that have gone downfield against us, I would say Mississippi State's probably the, in terms of offensive explosiveness, the lesser of those teams. But that was one of the shots that they attempted to take, and, you know, Hightower was Johnny on the spot.
Hey, as you're talking about Mississippi State, I'm glad we don't have a flag football team like they do. How'd you like some of those offensive sets that they were doing, mixing it up with the Favre relative?
You know, that was some pretty screwy alignments. And what did you think about Courtney drawing the offsides there?
I'm sorry. He just needs to be sick when they went over that film.
We need to have Todd Blackledge on the podcast because this is our second reference, and I think I've got another one lined up. You know, he was just kind of beside himself. You know, Courtney, you're the only one there, you know.
You're the only one over the ball.
That's right. All you have to do is watch the snap.
That was classic. Hey, what'd you think about Mississippi State doing the no huddle, but just staying at the line of scrimmage and really keeping us from rotating our personnel?
You know what? I'm glad you mentioned that. I didn't have that in my notes, but I definitely thought about that during the game, and I didn't want to talk about that. It was clever what they were doing. You know, they were going no huddle so that we couldn't rotate our personnel, but then they weren't going fast. They were going no huddle, but then kind of congregating and sort of standing around.
They're doing that crap where they look over at the all 11 guys look over at the coaches that we can't stand.
Yeah, but they weren't running it quick. They weren't running it at tempo like an Auburn might, like an Oregon, you know, would. You know, they were just looking and it just kind of lollygagging. And so the amount of time between plays was really no different. And what was interesting was that early when they were running that, we were not rotating our personnel. But then we kind of caught on, hey, they're just dicking around. So we started rotating our personnel. They were continuing to kind of like mosey up to the line, and we still had multiple guys. You know, we had 14, 15 guys on the field, and they were shuttling back and forth. I thought, man, they're going to go up there and quick snap that once.
Just you one know, time. Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't you just go up there and say, hey, guys, we're going to quick snap this one. We're going to catch them with their pants down, and we're going to get a quick 5 yards. But they never did that. I thought for darn sure that they would, and they never did.
That's a bad coaching move. Did you notice how they were trying to take their throwing quarterback, Russell, and they were trying to run with him on delayed draws, and they were trying to throw the ball with Ralph? I thought it was interesting that they were really trying to trip us up by just having the in their two-headed monster. They were trying to have them do what they're really not comfortable doing.
Yeah, it's almost like they're a poor man's, you know, LSU. You have, you know, one quarterback that's known for passing and one's for running, and you can kind of get a little clever by twisting that up. You know, it's almost cliched for a team like Mississippi State to try to do that because neither of the quarterbacks is as good as either of the LSU quarterbacks, but then you're trying to do more with them. You know, it schematically, it sounds good, but when you have the talent level that a Mississippi State does, at some level you just have to say, you know, do what you do, and then we're going to make the best of that because we don't have the skill set across the board to really go tricky-dicky too much.
No, that's true. And one thing that I noticed right there at the end of the first half I wanted to mention for a second is Russell was in at the time, and they were actually getting some momentum, and they were moving the ball. He connected on a couple passes. Dre tried to go for a pick one time, and they were moving down the field, and they got to like the 25 or 30. And then they just all of a sudden they bring in Ralph and ask him to make passes that is not his game. And next thing you know, they have to punt the ball. And I was sitting there, and they showed Russell on the sideline just so dejected. And I thought to myself, you know, I am so glad we're not one of those teams that do that two quarterback shit. Right there was just an example how it can just really come back to bite you in the butt.
Well, I just thought it was ridiculous. And it's one thing if you're going to have two quarterbacks and you're going to mix it up a little bit. But it's another thing when you have a quarterback that's driving, and his numbers and his production on that drive, they were pretty impressive.
He had done pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, and so he's in the flow, and he's moving the ball, and he's having success, and that's when you take him out. I mean, that may have been, you know, because the touchdown they scored was, like I said, was more against the special teams. In terms of a play, you know,
that was their best drive of the night.
Stretch of plays.
Yep.
And so let me just unplug this because I want to be clever. That's just ridiculous.
No, it was. One other thing that jumped out at me is a good thing that Auburn doesn't have Cam Newton. I guess we're not getting enough work on the option in practice because they really should have beat us over the head with that with Ralph, because the couple times that they tried to run the option, and once again they ran it with Russell trying to be, you know, sly, they had good success because our defensive end or Courtney Upshaw, one time it was Stinson and one time it was Upshaw, they're just sitting there in no man's land between the running back and the quarterback and not picking either one of those guys. And they only ran it like two or three times, but both of those times they got like 5 or 6 yards.
It's ironic that as good as our defense is, that the option could be our undoing.
we can't play it. We just don't have it. We don't have it down at all.
Hey, what'd you think about, you know, Mark Barron? You kind of clubbed him over the head a couple of weeks ago when you were giving him the mini game ball for his tackling, more thumping than tackling. He made quite a number of tackles, and he seemed to have some pretty good form wrapped up pretty well a couple of times.
Man, let me just say that I think his coach from St. Paul High School must have called and jumped his shit, because Mark Barron played a hell of a ball game. I had this down in my notes. I mean, you're talking about filling a hole. I noticed several times that he was wrapping up with both hands and driving through the player. There were several times he'd be 12 and 14 yards, you know, back there at the safety position. The next thing I know, he's about 4 yards off the ball, making a hit where a linebacker should be. I really thought, not to overstate things, because he had a really good sophomore campaign where he had those 7 or 8 picks, this might be his best ball game that I can remember, complete game, ironically, just like we talked about Dante last week.
That's high praise for Barron to say that this might be his best game.
He was everywhere. He was everywhere. Yeah, I didn't read the stat sheet, but he was making tackles everywhere, and they were damn good tackles.
He had 11 and showed some good form. He's had some big games before, and so to rank this up there, and probably deserves to be up there, that's some high praise. You mentioned Hightower, and I just think he was a wrecking crew. He also had 11 tackles. You know, 2.5 for loss, 1.5 sacks. You know, Hightower, you know, definitely didn't see much drop off from last week.
I'm going to say this kidding, because we talked last year about, you know, a healthy Upshaw and a healthy Hightower with Darius. You know, how nice would this be? Darius coming off one edge and Upshaw the other, and Hightower picking his spots. Well, there were two plays in particular where Upshaw whipped the shit out of their right tackle, and then Hightower whipped the shit out of their right tackle. And I was like, man, gosh, if y'all could have had that burst last year. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Well, it's good to see him healthy and to have that health down the stretch. I wanted to name Hightower. His performance, you know, was kind of a headline performance, and I think he was named, you know, one of the players of the game and maybe one of the players of the conference for the week. One thing that stood out to me that I wanted to spend a second on with Hightower was, it was about, you know, I try to make note of the time. There was about 6 minutes left in the third quarter, and, you know, Mississippi State has a 3-and-out. But on first down, Hightower's in coverage, covers the receiver. He doesn't catch the ball. On second down, Mosley has a sack of the quarterback, but we actually flood a hole, and so we send two blitzers in the hole, one's Hightower and one's Mosley, and, you know, the running back just has to choose who he's going to block, and so...
And he blocked neither, really.
he blocked Hightower is who he took on, and then Mosley got the sack, and then on third down, you know, Hightower's out in coverage and just about bats the ball, but certainly keeps the receiver from making a play on it, and, you know, just first down, second down, third down, Hightower, you know, consecutive plays... It makes the play. You know, Mosley got the sack, but he wouldn't have gotten it, you know, if Hightower hadn't have been right there to take on the blocker. And that was just impressive. And none of those three plays show up in his stat line, but that just speaks to, you know, his superior play. Those three plays that stand out to me, and then none of them really registered in the book.
No, that's a good point. And, you know, something else that you made me think of there is on that play where he hits the quarterback and throws the ball that should have been picked by Lester, that was also – an interesting setup, because Mississippi State took their right guard and they sent the right guard around the left end because they wanted to allow the quarterback, you know, a clean pocket on the left. Mm-hmm. And Dante read that and quickly sprinted in, and Mosley read it and quickly sprinted in behind him. And so when you just talked about them both filling a hole there together, why do you think we didn't see that kind of blitz packages in the center of the defense like that against LSU? And I say that because Ralph's a very good running quarterback. And it just seems like, I wonder why we didn't show some of the blitz packages that I saw the other night. I was like, damn, why didn't we show these against LSU?
Well, that's a good question. And we could probably drive ourselves crazy thinking about, you know, what we did and didn't do against LSU. And, you know, hopefully we'll have a chance to remedy some of those. You know, a short answer, and this is not well thought out, but, you know, Ralph is their better runner, but he's not, you know, a Jordan Jefferson. And so, you know, we probably just weren't as concerned with keeping him in the pocket and making him throw with his arm because, you know, we knew we could get him.
Okay. Anything else on the defensive side of the ball?
No, I think that, you know, five sacks, I'm pleased with that. We certainly affected their quarterback. And, you know, you mentioned it. We, you know, they had to play three of them. I think defense was stifling. I was very impressed with our defensive play.
Well, on special teams, I want to start by Coach Saban's quote at halftime. I just loved it. It's just so Saban-esque. When the sideline reporter asked him, you know, are you going to keep going to these kickers after they've missed a couple in the first half? And just to paraphrase, he just said, of course we're going to keep going to them. I've got confidence in them. That's why we're going to keep going to them. I just love that response. It was just like, you know, my wife has this saying about, you know, some people are a hammer and everything else is their nail. And that's Coach Saban. He's like, by damn it, I'm just going to keep going at you and you're going to figure it out.
I think a couple of things, you know, that's the right answer. And it's the right answer because it has to be the right answer. I mean, he can't say anything else in that situation and still expect to have the respect and the trust of those kickers. And, you know, anything other than that, when they're already shaky confidence, all that does is just deflate them, you know, even more.
Now, wait a minute. He was talking about shit we weren't doing well, that we weren't running the ball well. And, you know, I heard the Auburn coach in the Georgia-Auburn game saying, we're not doing shit well. We're not throwing the ball well. We're not protecting the quarterback well. We're not running the ball well. A head coach can say we're not kicking the ball worth the shit, can he?
You really start to look at two different dynamics. You know, if you say that we're not running the ball well, then, you know, there's running backs, there's five or six blockers, there's play calling, there's schemes. There's like 86 different things that can contribute to that. If you're mixing field goals, it's one thing. It's inside the kicker's head.
And but they're not prima donnas, are they? I mean, gosh, I mean, get a thick skin.
Well.
No, I'm just saying, what's the problem? I mean, you're a football player. I mean, damn.
Well, let's march your ass out there in front of, you know, 100,000 people cheering and see if you can hold your water.
Hey, you put your pads on. You knew what you were getting for. I guess I just don't buy into this shaky confidence thing. I just wanted to say that, not to spend too much time on this, I just love the fact that he said, you know, we're going to keep going at him. What else kind of jumped out at you? I did see on that first kick by Foster, he had plenty of leg. I mean, he could have made that 45-yarder by 10 more yards. And do you see something in the mechanics? I mean, I remember somebody saying, one of the commentators a couple weeks ago, you know, that he seems to be kicking the ball like he does on kickoffs and that it's a different mechanic or something. And I just don't know enough about that. And I was trying to back up and replay it and kind of watch what he was doing. And I can't see anything, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, do you see anything that he's doing mechanics that's wrong?
I don't know enough about, you know, the mechanics of a kicker to say that. Clearly something there that's not working. And you know, the reports are he consistently makes them in practice, you know, can't miss in practice. And, you know, you kind of roll them out there in front of the crowd. And I do think there's something, you know, mental with it. You can dismiss it or you can minimize it or you can say that he signed up for it. And all of that's true, but it doesn't change the fact that, you know, I can nail these consistently in practice. And in a game, I clinch and I miss.
Maybe it's just an experience thing. Because, you know, you remember Lee Tiffin, was he a freshman whenever he missed the three against Arkansas? And
yep, that's exactly what I thought during this game is, you know, these guys have to literally get their misses out of their system. And, you know, by golly, let's spread them out enough so they don't cost us a game like they did that Arkansas game. These guys could come back and, you know, Tiffin's the leading scorer all time at Alabama now. But, boy, he had that game that, you know, you almost can't forget. You almost can't wash away that game even with all the good that he had. And it's starting to feel that way with some of these kickers that, you know, they could go on to have All-America seasons, but, man, that LSU game is still always going to be there.
Hey, you know, we've talked about sideline reporters sometimes, and we've talked about, you know, why do they even have them? And we could go on and on about this. And you know how a lot of times they'll have some touchy-feely story that nobody gives a shit about during the football game? Well, I did think it was kind of hilarious during the game when I think her name is Holly Rowe, said, you know, don't despair, Bama fans. This won't help you this year, but Alabama, you know, has got Scout.com's number one rated kicker committed to Alabama, so hold on, help is coming. I just thought that was funny.
No, I thought that's funny, and I also think Holly Rowe's probably the one sideline reporter I can talk about without getting in trouble.
Anything else that jumps out at you about special teams? I guess one other thing that I'm curious your thoughts on is I don't think they had a kickoff returner that we were necessarily really scared of. But early on, you know, the first kickoff was a sky kick, and I'm like, okay, why are we doing that? And then we kept doing them, and I didn't really see why we were doing them. And all the kickoffs were kind of dropping around the 15 to 17 yard line. They were returning every kickoff to, you know, past the 30.
And I think that that goes back to, you know, a comment that Saban made, you know, earlier in the season. No, we're not trying to sky kick them. We just are, you know. So there's that issue that's still kind of related to the kicker. But it just seems that our coverage, we're struggling with our coverage. And so, like you said, you know, we sky kick them, and then they bust one.
What did you see on that play? I tried to go back and look, and it looked like we stayed in our lanes. What did you see on that play?
I don't know specifically what it was and why we couldn't cover that. You know, I half-kiddingly think, you know, that, you know, Vinny Sinceri knocked himself out of the game literally earlier, and you think, man, he's sort of a missile on special teams where we were the players waiting for someone else to make the play because they're used to someone else making the play, and then that someone else wasn't in the game.
That's a good point, and I've kind of kidded about, you know, him making a splash, but it's just been on special teams, and, you know, I do have to say that I love his spunk, and I love the energy that he's bringing to that portion of the team.
I think that it will be interesting over the course of his career to see, you know, how he develops and where and how he gets snaps in the defense. But, you know, I think he's definitely, if nothing else, he's carved out, you know, some legacy and some room to operate as a special teams player and could be a very special teams player.
All right, what about game balls? You want to start offense or defense?
Let's start offense. I'm giving my offensive game ball, and this is a miniature mini game ball.
And I'm writing down my number of the player, hoping that you won't take mine. Go ahead.
I'm going with Kevin Norwood.
Ah, damn. That's exactly the number I just wrote down on my piece of paper. Go ahead.
You know, we talked about it a little bit earlier. He's a guy that we haven't seen much of Kevin Norwood this season. And so very realistically, he may not have expected to receive any snaps Saturday night. I know that sounds odd, but, you know, he may not have expected to play very much. But then when Hanks goes down, you know, he's right on the field. And he only has two catches. And, of course, we'd like to see more. But, you know, he had a long 38-yard. That was the longest play of the game.
That's that drag play, man, that works for us every game. And yeah, he did that same play later in the game, and A.J. just overthrew him. He would have had another 35-yard catch.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And so I just give a little bit of a nod to Norwood for stepping in. Like I said, probably not expecting to play a whole lot. And, you know, coming up in a couple of clutch spots.
Okay. Well, I will pick another player then. And we've also alluded to this a little bit earlier. But I think my offensive game ball player is going to have to be McCullough and Steen. And I've given Steen a lot of grief, but they got really no pressure on the quarterback to speak of. Yes, he was flushed out of the pocket a couple times, but really not the kind of pressure that we brought on their quarterback. And I think Steen came in and played pretty well. And I guess what I'm saying is I'm glad at least we've got somebody like him with 8 or 9 games of starting experience. And McCullough, you know, a few weeks ago, man, he was going to leave this place and kind of be a forgotten guy. And we know of, you know, like Brian Motley. He was going to leave this place and be like, yeah, on senior day, let's recognize him. But who's McCullough? But you know what? Now, and kind of what he has done in a miniature Barrett Jones fashion, he's kind of carved a little bit of a legacy for himself. And people like you and me that don't have a life but Alabama football, we're going to kind of remember who he was 10 years from now.
I completely agree. And it's a kind of a testament to the guys who stick around and you wonder if they're ever going to play or, you know, kind of whatever happened to their career. But, you know, for some of them that have talent and, you know, if they stick around, you know, a fantastic opportunity can open up for them.
What about defense? Let me go first so you don't take my player.
All right.
Defense has got to be, you know, Barron would have been the headliner, like you said, with Hightower. And so I've got to give mine to Gentry. I mean, you know, is that your player?
No, okay, go for it on Gentry.
And Gentry, you know, for those guys that don't know Gentry, I mean, he's got a big old pot belly. You know, he's probably all of 6 foot tall, you know, 270 pounds. And, you know, his body fat composition is not the same as some of the other players. But, man, I don't know where he's come up with his motor and his ability to beat double teams. But he got a lot of play in that ball game playing off of Upshaw. And Upshaw kept stunning inside and taking a couple guys with him. It's like these two have been working on this in practice because, you know, Upshaw would stunt in and Gentry would very quickly use his speed to run around Upshaw. And one time he made a sack and he came back to the line of scrimmage and Upshaw kind of gave him a fist to the arm and just kind of smiled at him like, yep, just the way we worked on it in practice. And he's kind of worked himself into that rotation. And the reason I'm going on about this is you're seeing him more than Ed Stinson, who was getting a lot of playing time at A-Day game. And before we knew what was going to happen with Quentin Dial and Williams, Stinson thought he was going to be a starter. And really, besides Damian Square and Courtney Upshaw, I would say he's your number three guy, or maybe he's your number two guy behind Upshaw with quarterback pressure this year.
Yeah, Gentry's one of those guys that, you know, he's not going to be the first one off the bus. And, you know, if you lined up the defensive lineman on the team, you know, he would be your, probably might be the last one you would choose if you were picking. But he's just one of those guys that just, you know, has a motor and has some tenacity and just.
But it's like what you just said about McCullough. He's a senior also. And he just hung around and hung around and hung around.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And he's almost like a Will Lowry kind of guy that, you know, what's he doing out on the field? How is he better than, you know, the more athletic guys ahead of him? But, you know, I don't know how he is. He just is. And
but think about who he's that kind of guy. Think about who he's ahead of, right? He's ahead of Quentin Dial.
Mm-hmm.
He's ahead of Andre Billingsley. There's a couple other guys that are
Chris Bonds, Brandon Ivory. Absolutely.
So it's like
Edie Smith.
Who's your guy on defense?
On defense, and, you know, this is almost like a Todd Blackledge special, but, you know, I'm going Menzie. He had, you know, five tackles, two pass breakups. He had a quarterback hurry. You know, on one play with, I think it was Ralph in, Menzie was blitzing, but they were running kind of the option the other way.
Yeah, that was that play we were talking about.
So he just had a couple of plays. The pass breakups certainly are huge, but he just seemed to be everywhere, you know, at different stages of the game and really, really came up big for us. And so I'm giving the nod to Daquan Menzie.
Just to add my two cents to that for a quick second, in the losses last year that we had without his presence, when we had to play Phelan against the slot guy, remember how many times a South Carolina would convert a key third and seven to move the chains? And I'm not trying to pick on Phelan here because we haven't seen much of him. But what a difference Menzie has made, a la Javi a couple years ago. We didn't have that stop on that slant on third and seven last year.
No, you're absolutely right. With Menzie being fully healthy, you know, he was less than 100% last year. And so this year, you know, we're seeing a lot of good things out of him. And so he's going to be one of those guys, you know, because he's just a two-year guy. He'll come and go, and a lot of people, you know, 5 years from now will have kind of forgotten, you know, Daquan Menzie. But, you know, meanwhile, he'll be cashing checks in the NFL.
Non-Alabama related game balls I'd like to work in really quickly.
Oh, wow. Okay. And see, this is a new and inventive way. Hats off to creativity.
That's okay.
Here.
That's okay.
This is a new way quick. For you to screw up the game ball. No, go no, for is, it.
You're going to like this.
All right.
The first one has to go to a Nick Saban protege, also showing himself well, you know, having learned well under Nick Saban. I just thought the move by Bo Pelini to send out his Nebraska football team to shake the hands of Penn State players and do a prayer at midfield before the game was just a very classy act.
No, it was classy. I agree with that.
My other game ball goes to the TCU head coach, Gary Patterson, for making a huge ballsy play call to go for it for the two-point conversion, which, if nothing else, allows you and I to tell these Boise State people just to shut up.
And then just if we're going to play off of TCU, it just seems like a decade or so ago, we took the wrong coach from there, huh?
It is kind of funny in that game, though, that on that pass interference call that was home cooking. Well, there's two things I want to quickly mention. Number one, That game was supposed to be in TCU, and it got moved to Boise, which is funny. Second of all, that pass interference late in the game that was a horrible play call. The ball was thrown about 30 feet over the boys' head, and it was almost like they were trying to do everything possible to get Boise State back down the field. You know, karma's a bitch. I just think it's funny that all that happened and they still missed the field goal. And, oh, by the way, this is the same team that you lost to by a field goal last year also. It's just kind of funny.
Yeah, you know, we would drive people crazy, but we could do a show on the Mountain West and the ineptitude of their commissioner. And so to do something so trivial, so sophomoric as to change the location of the game because TCU has an opportunity to do something bigger and better, very childish on the part of the Mountain West commissioner. And so, you know, they kind of got, you know, like you said, karma's a bitch.
See, I told you you'd like those two game balls. Those were good.
Yeah, not bad.
That's all I got, man.
All right, so what's your thought this week? We've got Georgia Southern coming up. What you think about this one?
Well, you know, we always say these are games where we want to be able to get some guys some experience. And, I mean, right now is when we need the guys to get healthy. I mean, the way Auburn looked against Georgia, you know, they're not playing big boy football, but they always play us tight. And, you know, as well as McCullough and Steen played, we need Barrett Jones in there. We need Kirkpatrick at 100%. We need some of these other guys to get healed up. And so I'd love us to come out and not do any traps, no pulls, just run right at them and do 3 yards in a cloud and dust and do Trent for one series and then do Eddie Lacy for one series. Let Eddie take the week off and do Jostin Fowler. But, you know, we need to be up by, you know, 30 points at halftime, and this needs to be like a 48-3 type of final score.
Well, I think that, you know, and a lot of fans maybe don't pay attention, and that's, I guess, kind of ironic, but Georgia Southern and not Georgia State, and I think that's more than a subtle difference. You know, Georgia Southern, they're D2, and they don't call it D2 anymore, but I'll go to the grave calling it D2.
Yep.
You know, but they're a 9-1 team. They're not a bad team. You know, they are consistently good in their league. They recruit well and play very well for their league. There were coaches there that we were looking to hire at various stages over the last few years. You know, I'm not calling this, but if we don't have our head in the game, this could be an App State type situation. And, you know, I asked Michigan about that. I don't think that'll happen, but this is a good team and we need to take them serious. They do a lot of things. They do a lot of option type play. And we talk about the option being something that gives us fits. And so, you know, we're going to have to really play some disciplined ball up front. And then, of course, they'll take their shots trying to throw it over us. I think we beat them.
But you don't think it's no 48-3?
You know, it's a 35-7. I mean, this will be realistic. I do think we beat them. And I do think that the most important thing that we'll try to get out of this game, and this is why I think they score a touchdown, maybe two, you know, late in the game, is we try to get up on them and then rest as many guys as we can. And then just listen to this list of players that certainly have missed game action, and some have sat out, you know, entire games. But Barrett Jones, Darius Hanks, Marquise Mays, Jesse Williams, Vinny Sinceri, Dre Kirkpatrick, Eddie Lacy, Brad Smelly, Alex Watkins. That's 9 players. 6 of them are starters. All of them are contributors. Some of them will play this week, and that's fine. They're just
banged up. You didn't even say C.J. Mosley, right?
And I didn't mention C.J. Mosley because he's been back a couple.
Right, but yeah, there's your seventh starter. There's your seventh starter. Anthony Steen's your eighth starter.
Yeah, and so those are all guys in various stages of disrepair. And, you know, we need them to rest and play as few snaps as possible this week so they're ready, you know, for what we have in store ahead of us. But I think we beat them. I really do. I think it's a 35-7. I think we probably play it pretty close to the vest. It probably is a lot of, you know, running the ball. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Jostin Fowler's the leading rusher on the game. I don't even think he took snaps the last 2 weeks. I think that's kind of the way we look at it. And we probably don't show a whole lot, and we probably don't do a whole lot. It'll be a fancy game. It'll play right into the hand of all the mouth breathers who think that our offense has suddenly come off the rails. But we'll walk away with a victory.
Okay, sounds good, man. I hope my score happens instead of yours.
Well, I do, too. I hope your score does as well, but I hope that it is mostly backups putting that score up. All right, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Find us on Facebook, iTunes, and Twitter, as well as the web. Roll Tide.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the best place to play football.
Everything with an attitude.
All right.